Now I have Anuru Ryle, who is a, I would say Anuru, young adjacent trade unionist and community organiser, particularly around the Porirua, Rimutaka sort of area. And we're going to have a kōrero about quite a few things with you, Anuru. Kia ora.
Kia ora. I'll just correct you. Wainui o mata.
Wainui o mata. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is, mate, winning Hurricanes winning two games is a lead up means nothing when you choke at a semi-final, all right?
Yeah, why did you have to remind me? But I already had your brother on the phone during the week.
That's right. Actually, Anuru is a man of many talents, Martin, including being a commentator at rugby. So, yeah, many, many things to his skill set. But for the last few weeks, we've spoken about the budget, Martin and Anuru, and but what I want to get is a Porirua perspective. What are the folks in Porirua, Wainui o Mata, working class Wellington saying about the budget?
Yeah, well, I've got a lot of friends who work in the public service, and we all know there's been a lot happening in that space recently. And a close friend of mine, in fact, a couple, husband and wife, went to school with them. They bought their house in Stokes Valley, working class, at the peak of the housing crisis a couple of years ago, at a fairly hefty price. They leaned on the first home by a grant to get there. They've now got an almost two-year-old child who has just started their early childhood education. And last week, after a week away on holiday in Australia, the wife went to work and was told there was going to be a meeting the next day to talk about the future of the jobs in that particular department. She turned up the next day. They had the meeting. Everyone in her team except for her got the cut. And so she was, you know, feeling pretty stressed out at that point in time with a young family. Mm. And then other things coming out of the budget affecting a family like them, you know, the National Coalition Government reversing the, well, getting rid of the 23 hours for 2-year-olds. So they were really looking forward to that. Mm. So, yeah, there are a number of families, working class families out there, especially in the Hutt Valley, who are feeling the same sort of pressures at the moment.
But Martin, I've got Martin, the Bomber Bradbury, in the studio with me. And I do, look, I've seen a lot of ugliness in politics, but I actually don't think I've witnessed ugliness to this sort of depraved level when David Seymour used one word. When people were talking about losing their jobs, being made redundant, Martin, he said, good. Good. Yeah, your comments.
I think that rather than intelligent adult discussion about where our country needs to go, we have allowed the debate to be overtaken by hate algorithms on social media, where those who are able to spit the greatest amount of poison are the ones that are being celebrated. And what we're seeing is almost like a social spite that is being implemented. And when you actually try to drill down into a lot of these policy decisions, it's nothing more than, our side doesn't like you lot, so we're just going to give you the bit of a bash. Mm. And there doesn't seem to be anything beyond a very nasty, bullying vitriol. And I think that a lot of that was the post-COVID bitterness of the last election. I think a lot of people were angry with Labor. They reacted to Labor. And it's ended in a result that no one really understood. I don't think a lot of New Zealanders who voted for the right or didn't vote at all had any real understanding of just how crazy this policy platform would be.
But see, Anuru, we're looking at unemployment at 4.3. I think it could get as high as 6.
Yes.
Or thereabouts. And what we do know in areas like Wainui or Mata, you basically double those figures, particularly for Māori and Pacifica. Sort of tell us the impact that long-term unemployment has in groups that represent that you represent on a community basis, Anuru.
Yeah, well, I've already touched on some of the, you know, some of the issues facing our region here in Wellington with a number of public servants being affected. But when you think about some of the other the other jobs out there, we look after teachers. I've worked for NZEI, Te Reo Roa, teachers in the early childhood space and the primary school space. And at the moment, their biggest concern really is around the deregulation that Seymour is about to bring in. So it's not necessarily around the job losses at this stage, but it's more around the conditions at work, which are going to be more unsafe for them.
That's right. And isn't that interesting, Bomber? But on Monday, Bishop said, oh, well, we're going to grow the economy and people will earn better wages, so they'll be able to afford houses. You know, he walked back the issue of houses prices going down because he knows amongst his constituency that doesn't get him very far. But given the fact that unemployment is rising, it is, when we talk about 5.5%, we're talking about another 30,000-40,000 people. The reality is it's about supply and demand, isn't it, Martin? You have higher unemployment, it put pressures on wages and salary downwards.
I think that what you see is a government right now that doesn't want to uphold its end of the social obligation. If you look at everything this government's talking about, it's talking about user pays, it's talking about privatisation, it's talking about funding all of the structures through people's own pockets. And when you've got a government that is actually anti-government and doesn't believe in the state approach, I mean, I really fear for our brothers and sisters in the teaching community, because it seems like this government is getting ready to put a lot of privatisation into a public education system. And what annoys me most about that is that we are being sold the story that New Zealand public education is a total failure. If you look back on those PISA reports, it consistently shows that New Zealand students are above the OECD average, and that when we are succeeding, when our young people are succeeding in science and reading and math, they're doing so on a spectacular level that's higher than the OECD average. Our public education system is not in crisis. The funding of it is in crisis. The results, our young people are doing amazing things educationally, and they could do so much more if public education was properly funded.
And what's the alternative that this government in particular looking at, Anaru, is funding charter schools at a higher rate, without the core curriculum, without trained teachers. I think they had 5 or 6 up and running by the end of the last time they tried this. Two or three fell over within months, actually. But it's that sort of deregulation of the education market, because they're treating it like a fish market, that will have long-term consequences for the people of your community, Anaru.
Yeah, that's right. And like I mentioned before, deregulation is a massive threat to some of our members at NZDI, particularly with the charter schools coming in. And this government is going to be more radical on that front. So last time around, they just had a handful of them, which weren't overly successful when you look back at it. But this time around, they're actually, it's a full frontal attack on some of these public schools. And so they're actively looking at changing some of these public schools into charter schools, which is a big worry, and it's a huge worry for our members as well. But in the ECE space, David Seymour has already initiated steps to review the regulations.
That's right.
You know, regulations and fees. So some of our members are very concerned about that. And one thing in particular they're concerned about is just around the care of our tamariki, care of our tamariki there. So there's regulations for a reason. David Seymour is there to pretty much protect some of these. I think Tiano Tuiono described it quite well.
Yes.
McDonald's application of the ECE sector. So there's a number of issues on that front.
Oh, no, there are huge issues. And it's the profit. An incentive for ECEs. You know, you've got one organisation that gets $240 million per year. And the concern that I have is every time more money is put into the industry, because that's what it is, you know, you and I or the average person thinks, yeah, that's a good idea. But actually, it doesn't mean cheaper rates for the parents, because there's no top, you know, there's no top rate. They just add fuel to that. You have whole towns, particularly smaller provincial New Zealand towns that are monopolised by some of those organisations. It looks like we need to just not tinker it, but we need some fundamental change there, Bomber.
Oh, look, as far as I'm concerned, it is an absolute outrage that ECE is not nationalised.
Yeah.
Why isn't it free, just as secondary and primary school is? Why don't we have the extra funding going in to nationalise the ECEs so that the standards are held, so that there is better funding available for them, and also for working mothers and fathers? They're able to get their kids into care without it costing an arm and a leg. We have this insane situation where working parents are going out there and paying huge sums of money to just have their children looked after. If we believe in an egalitarian state, we would want to make sure that working mothers and fathers are able to have their children looked after without costing an arm and a leg in a system that is actually well regulated, and not this open, crazy suggestion that ACT are putting forward, where they're going to lower the standards of the teachers so that anyone can become look after those kids. Yeah. I don't think that's the solution at all.
But we've got some hope on the horizon, Anaru. Some say more than 20,000 marched in Auckland, and here in Tomaki Makaurau, 40,000 across the country. A sort of young people, trade unionists, environmentalists, our greenies, a broad support across the community. What was your perspective on that, Anaru?
Yeah, I thought it was good, and a show of unity across the movement to show out in such large numbers, especially with the Toitū Te Tiriti protest, the fast track bill protest, and here in Ponikia we had the Protect the Cuts protest as well, and our union NZDI Te Rūroa were very involved in all of those actions. But in terms of what needs to be done to keep the momentum, particularly with the union movement, we need to look at broad-based organising. To look at broad-based, we need to incorporate more broad-based organising. One example for us with our union and some of the mahi that we've been doing is simply just around, you know, let's use the Treaty Principles Bill as an example. We know it's coming up. Our union were active in turning up to the Hui Aumotu and the recent Hui Taumata. Our members were active in sharing exactly what Māori are after at the moment, and that's kotahitanga. And we've got an active organising plan to ensure that our members up and down the country, they're going to be affected by this. Eternity is mentioned all throughout legislation, which will affect what they do in their mahi. They'll be involved in talking to not only their colleagues in the workplace, but looking outside of that and talking to the parents, the whānau, and some of those community groups that they're all linked to. Because when it comes to that Treaty Principles Bill, it'll essentially come down to numbers with the submissions to put the pressure back on Luxon to stick to his commitment to basically vote it down after select committee.
And we saw that a bit, didn't we, Bomber? Peeling back the fast track, some of the more severity components of the fast track act a little bit, so it does work. This public pressure.
The public pressure certainly does work, but I think part of the problem is that Luxon is such an incredibly weak Prime Minister, and he is being snookered by Winston and David Seymour almost weekly. I fear that he's going to get tripped up and trapped up into these agreements that he's made, and he's not going to be able to move on it, because my understanding, particularly with the fast-track powers, is that this is absolutely essential to New Zealand First's economic platform, right? The ability to rubber stamp and ram things through is actually legitimately fundamental to their entire plan. So I don't think that Luxon has the skill set to be able to navigate this, and that the ability of this to be a one-term government, I think, is very much on the cards. I would be very interested to hear, Anaru, your thoughts on what have we learnt from this government coming in and their, you know, use of urgency to ram through legislation to immediately change things in 100 days. Is this something that a lesson that the left needs to pick up? If we have the opportunity to have the numbers to be the Democratic majority in Parliament in 2026, surely one of the things that we have to move on immediately is actually putting fair pay agreements back into the legislative agenda and passing that in the first 100 days. Do you think that maybe the left has been too focused on getting agreement from everyone at the table before we move forward, and that actually maybe a little bit more push and shove on our side of the fence is required to ensure that workers' rights are respected.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think my personal opinion is that looking back at what's happened in the last few months since the election, this national-led coalition government has just gone on and done what they needed to do.
Mm.
I think the left as a whole, between those progressive parties, need to learn from that and try and find ways to entrench some of these things or get them in sooner rather than later. We know with fair pay agreements there were issues with Winston in that term. Mm. But then why did it take so long?
Exactly.
To get it implemented.
Exactly. So
there's a number of lessons that I think the left needs to learn. Chris Hipkins, to his credit, you know, he addressed that over the weekend in the media when he was at the Labor Regional Council conference in Wellington, and said that fair pay agreements was a priority. So let's just wait and see and keep an eye on that.
Anadu, look, times change, but I'm of the generation of with your father, where we saw the introduction of the Employment Contracts Act. At the same time, well, actually before that, we were trying to negotiate a deal called Compact with Labor whilst they were deregulating. And the trade union movement and leadership was criticised. And we've had this debate for 30 to 40 plus years. Mm. Is the leadership doing all it can to get this progressive train coming along, Anaru?
I think so, and I kind of sense there's almost a generational shift happening at the moment within the union movement. So we've got some of the next generation coming through the ranks.
Mm.
It's exciting to see. And when you look at our politicians in Parliament and some of the sort of newer, younger politicians coming through, it is a time where the next generation are stepping up, whether that's in Parliament, whether it's in the union movement, or whether it's on the streets, turning up at these protests that we just talked about earlier. I think there needs to be generational change. I think there needs to be succession planning to ensure that the union movement is going to be sustainable into the future, but also the new ideas that people can bring to the table. I just reflect on an action I went to earlier this week at Victoria University in Wellington, where it was a packed house full of unionists and others in the community to put pressure on Victoria University to be an accredited living wage employer after finding out that 500-odd staff still were paid below the living wage. And that was led by mostly young activists from the university. So there is some hope in there. There is some hope.
Talking of those new ideas moving forward from 2026, and let's say that part of the agenda is getting the fair pay agreement back on track and passed through legislation that first 100 days, what I would like to see added to that is universal student membership at all Auckland University, at all universities in New Zealand, actually bring back the student unions through compulsory fees when you go to university, because that's such an important building block for democratic processes, but also a push to ensure that every migrant labourer coming into New Zealand is automatically enrolled into a union, whether that's be through the CTU.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you could immediately stop that level of exploitation of migrant workers if they were all immediately enrolled into unions. You can see that Christopher Luxon last week came out and said that he wants to see the Pacific Island workers jumping by 50%. Mm-hmm. Well, we know there are major problems of exploitation into that market. He's opening the floodgates for more exploitation. And moving forward for 2026 and those new ideas, do you think it's time to actually start talking about compulsory unionism in some of these areas, where you can have a dramatic rebuilding of the leadership moving forward for young people, while also ensuring migrant labourers aren't being exploited?
Yeah, well, ultimately, it always comes down to organising, right? So this is always something that, you know, people have talked about and wanted to happen, but we need to sort of build some organising strategies behind that. Look at the living wage movement, right?
Yep.
2012, 2013, no one knew about it.
Mm.
But now it's turned mainstream to the point where in the last government, they made sure that not only employees were paid the living wage at a bare minimum, but the contractors were as well in the public service. I mean, that's just a really good example of getting organised across different organisations, across different communities, and sort of having a bit of a strategy around that, because if we can't get people on board to actually push it, it does make it quite hard to get the politicians to listen.
Yeah. That's right. And yeah. Look, here's an issue that ACT are pushing at the moment. There are 500,000 New Zealanders that work part-time, and ACT wants to reduce sick leave. Also, I think a lot of misinformation about how much leave you are entitled to as a part-timer. She said, the name escapes me, the industrial relations spokesperson.
Brooke Van Velden.
Yep, Brooke. She said that in theory people can get 10 days 10 days sick leave if they're part-timers, which is the equivalent of what full-timers will get. But their days are very different in nature, aren't they, Anaru?
Yeah, so the government, like you say, has announced its intention to prorate the 10 days per year for sick leave for part-time workers. As we know, Labor, the last Labor government, increased the sick leave from 5 days to 10 days, but... Mm. But even when we had the 5 days, it wasn't prorated. It was a minimum for all workers. So yes. And so is the 10 days. So the prorating will mainly affect women workers. And my wife is one of them. Yep. We've just had a baby, and she's about to enter the workforce and start off part-time before building up to full-time. But when your child is sick, you need to take the time off.
Mm.
And it's a reason why... the 10 days was introduced was to support those workers, especially those working part-time.
You know, Anaru and Manan, and our listeners, I want to tell you a quick little story. I do a lot of mainstream media, and not just iwi, and I'll name the channel ZB. All right, every time there would be discussion about industrial relations or sick leave or whatever, often the host and the other guests would be anti-union, anti-leave, etc. But what I would trip them up, where I would get them, I would say, if you were sick tomorrow, what would your employer do? Oh, they'd give me as much time off as possible, you know, as I needed. And I said, what about that road worker working today when it's pissing down with rain? They don't have that. They don't have that industrial strength.
Mm.
They're working in much worse conditions. So often these people that are theorising about these type of real impact on people's lives aren't affected by it, Martin.
Mm, mm. Well, that certainly is the case, I think, for most of the right-wing media in this country. You know, their sympathies only go so far. I think that the egalitarian principles that this government and this country was founded on, the values, 40 hours working week, you know, women voting first in this country. We have stood up for the idea of an egalitarian sort of state. And I think that by underfunding our public services the way we have, the neoliberalism that we've seen, this market forces above all else, it not only erodes the economic well-being of a country, I think it erodes the social well-being. And you can see where the explosion of crime comes from, where the explosion of self-damage comes from. Why is it that New Zealand has such a high suicide rate? Why is it that New Zealand has so many social problems? And I think that part of that is because we've walked away from that social fabric. And so this right-wing policy and this right-wing stuff that we're seeing, which is an incredibly ideological government, it's shocking and it's actually negative for us.
It is negative for us. And Anaru, we're seeing another attack on health and safety in employment.
Mm.
You know, we have as many folks that die at work as we have murdered. It's roughly about the same.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. And then we have thousands that are affected and permanently disabled every year as a result of workplace injury or workplace illness.
Mm.
Injury is often recorded much better than illnesses because it's, you know, there's no social insurance, there's no statistics that are gathered. Anaru, sort of how are your members viewing this, the deregulation of the health and safety and employment, considering how bad our track record is?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I've touched on some of it already, but currently, like, we still have workers dying at work. And in the last budget, the number of health and safety inspectors had been reduced as well. So in our sector, especially in early childhood, We've got Megan White. She's one of the members of ours, and she owns a she's the manager of a community-owned centre. So she's looking at what's coming, and she says if the government takes away all of these regulations, then teachers are going to have no protection, and children aren't going to be safe. It's a very scary prospect for her and her teachers. Mm. And the other thing too is what David Seymour keeps talking about will actually eventuate to more teachers not being qualified and being in there. And as Bomber said before, anyone can basically come off the street and and work at an early childhood centre.
Yeah,
And he's
and will it, sadly, will it get to a stage where a child dies?
Yes. And here is the thing. It only takes 1 or 2 years to wreck the industry. Our talent, as they are now, goes to Australia. You know, at the beginning of the year, I quoted 1,000 people a week leaving. Mm. It's up to about 1,700 at the moment.
Mm.
Then it takes decades to rebuild your workforce, Bomber.
And it's all because we refuse to tax the wealthiest amongst us a basic increase to be able to afford our infrastructure. And I think that keeps coming back to where it's got to be, and hopefully Labor are listening.
Anaru, there's some hope, though. Have a look at the polls. 7 months into it, the Prime Minister's numbers are sinking faster than the Titanic did.
Yes.
Labor, who hasn't, you couldn't call it exactly assertive, is and the left is slightly closing the gap between left and right. I'd like to see it at a quicker rate, but considering where we are in the election cycle, I think, Anaru, the message is that even the middle class, people are getting tired of this government really quickly.
Well, think of the cancer patients who are still waiting. And then think about what Bomber was saying before about how weak Christopher Luxon is in controlling Winston and David Seymour. And my prediction, and this is what I've been telling my mates, is that I think there's more likelihood of Luxon actually leaving as Prime Minister between now and the next election than being unsettled as a government.
Absolutely.
And I think watch the space when David Seymour takes over as Deputy Prime Minister in a few more months, and let's just keep an eye on Winston.
That's right. And also, mate, also there's this big job being advertised right at the moment, CEO of Bowie. You know, your mate Matthew Hooton's talking about it publicly.
I know.
Yeah. Hey, Anaru Ryle, community activist and unionist, thank you very much for joining us here on Wātea tonight. Always a pleasure, and very important to get your perspective from Whanganui Ātara. That's Anaru Ryle, everybody.